Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
I love riding my bike. I love running. I don't care what they think about it. I love it.
At that point when I knew I was going to win, chills just went up and down my entire body.
I don't believe there are any good or bad foods. Food is food.
I still feel so passionate about getting that record that I'm like, I'm just going to do it.
As an athlete, I was like, what's my story or what's your story? What can you learn from it and what can you teach people?
Welcome to the Iron Women Podcast. I'm Alyssa Gadeski, and I am here with my co-host, or at least part of my co-host, I think, because I can only see her ear and her left eye at this current moment. She is, I think, kind of hiding in a quiet spot in her current location. Haley, can you tell us where you are, or are you in some secret training location right now? What's going on?
Yeah, Alyssa, I'm at a top secret training location, and everyone's going to be like, no. I am actually, I think I said last week, I'm at Team SFQ camp in San Diego, and I am hiding out in Hillary Biscay's house so I could record this. I admit I forgot to pack my microphone and all my recording equipment, and I am actually on Hillary's husband, Mike 12-6's computer, trying to find a place where we have Wi-Fi strong enough where children and animals aren't going to be disrupted or disrupt me. So we're doing our best, but the camp so far has been amazing. Like the camp actually has been amazing. It's just maybe not the easiest podcasting environment.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. And I know I saw some pictures and you got there after the race in Oceanside. So did you catch any of the race in Oceanside? Were you training and then traveling? How did you spectate that at all virtually?
I missed the race. I missed the race because I was actually traveling during that time. So I missed the race, but I caught some of the, like, I heard the coverage was really good is what I heard. And then I got here late in the day on Saturday. And so I didn't hear, but I talked to a lot of people who raced, a lot of the women who were actually at the camp, the Team SFQ camp, Alex Watt, who's a fellow professional, she raced and then did the camp. Alyssa, shout out to Alex and also I believe Jesse, who is your athlete, because they raced on Saturday and then did like 4 hours on the bike on Sunday. And I was like, I went to Jesse. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so impressed. And she was like, well, Alyssa is my coach. And so you obviously have a reputation, but I was very impressed that they could do that. We also did a pretty big climb in our ride on Sunday, but had incredible views. But it was hard enough for me and I did not race on Saturday. But Oceanside, okay, going back to Oceanside, it looked like fantastic racing. Taylor Nibb ran away with it, swam bike and ran away with it.
Yeah, Haley, it was a really fun. So I did catch I missed the swim coverage, but I did finish workouts in time to catch a lot of the coverage. And I have to give a quick plug to Outside, I guess, Plus. Outside Plus is what, Outside Watch, whatever we were watching it on. I don't know. I don't think Kelly O'Mara has like a direct hand in exactly how good the coverage was per se, but she is kind of in the Outside family now with Triathlete Magazine. She's the editor in chief. And Kelly, whatever the family is doing there is doing it right. The coverage was awesome. It was much like easier to watch. Like the stream was constant. It wasn't breaking up all the time. It was good coverage. Everything I really enjoyed getting to watch it. And I have to say you got to watch it if you are an Outside Plus member, I think, which is $99 a year. But everyone, you get Triathlete Magazine like online access for that. You get Trail Runner online access for that. You get Gaia GPS membership, which is something I use for my trail adventures. And so that's like $25 a year, but that's included in that. And I just found out the other day, because I'm an Outside Plus member, I was like registering for a random local running race and I got $30 off my race entry fee because I'm an Outside Plus. They just like gave me $30 to use towards that race entry fee. So everyone, join Outside Plus, get to watch the rest of the races that they're covering this year because it's well done. It's worth your money. You basically can earn your money back through various other things. So that's my non-scripted plug for that, which I really enjoyed, but I am throwing that in there. But the race was exciting. Taylor Nibb just crushed it. She was flying by pro men on the bike, which was really fun to see. And I mean, Haley, she finished within, and I didn't check the stats, but I saw something on Twitter that she finished within 8%, I think, of the male pro winner's time, right? And so, I mean, that's insane. That means like, I mean, one of the USA triathlon standards for qualifying to race your pro race as a pro for athletes is to finish within 8% of the winning time, right? So, I mean, Taylor's basically qualifying to race in the men's field time after time, right? So it's like, that's pretty insane, which is, she's raising the bar and she's only at the start, right? So super fun to see. I don't think we'll see a lot of Taylor, it sounds like, in the next like short term here. She's going to do some draft legal racing, I think. But really cool to see. Great race from Holly Lawrence. Good to see, you know, it was like, I don't know, a nice little prelude to the world championships, I think, coming up, between your race and then Oceanside. I think it's going to be quite a showdown in St. George. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah. I mean, Louisa Baptista, who's like another ITU athlete, she came in second there. And I thought that was, I mean, we are seeing these short course athletes do really, really well at 70.3 distance. And I think that is exciting. And then you did see some of the women who are going to be racing in St. George, the Sky Monch, Ruth Astell, Daniela Reif, who, you know, were like the, you know, top 10 still. And you know that they are doing Ironman training and being trying to be Ironman World Championship fit in, you know, a month. And so I think that that's, it is, like you said, it is, it's exciting. And it's kind of a wild year where we have a world championship coming up in a month. So no, it was cool. And the vibe here in Oceanside is just, I mean, I'm not in Oceanside right now. I'm in Carlsbad, which is near Oceanside, but I think the vibe is just like exciting. Like people were like excited about race season and about St. George coming up. And I think it's just very, very exciting. And I think it's been fun for me to be here. I think before I came, Alyssa, you said something about, what was it, like filling up my happiness cup or something like that? Like that's how you described it for by coming to one of these camps. And actually that is how it has felt. Like that ride, the rides yesterday were so much fun. We also did a swim in an outdoor pool, which is like my favorite, this gorgeous outdoor pool. And excuse me, there is just something about being around, you know, a bunch of women who are into triathlon or into the, kind of the same things that we are, and that has been like refreshing. And I do feel like I'm going to come out of this camp with some fitness from training and obviously like the rides, the runs, the swims, but also that camaraderie that I think I've definitely missed over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I'm having major FOMO just seeing the pictures and seeing the activities you guys are doing. I think you and I both share that we do a lot of our training on our own. So camps like that, I know, are quite special. And I'm super excited you get to be out there and experiencing that. I, you know, am back home. Haley, I had a very productive morning today. I did my Inside Tracker blood draw this morning, 7:15 a.m., the gentleman was pumped to just have me knocking on the door, ready to go. Like, I'm ready to be to eat my breakfast, so you got to take my blood out first soon, sir. And so did that. Then I, you know, there was a Dunkin' Donuts right next door, so I got myself a little breakfast treat. And then the grocery store was right next to that. So I had, like, the most productive morning ever between Inside Tracker, grocery shopping, all done before 9 a.m. It was amazing. So while I'm not at Smash Camp right now, and I am sad about that, at least I'm not like wallowing away on the couch. So we'll just say that. And then in the, you know, I should have Inside Tracker results coming up pretty quickly. They usually turn around in a few days. So Haley, next week, I didn't do inner age draw this time. I'm just doing kind of like the quarterly biomarker, like check to mostly check iron and vitamin D and make sure everything looks good as I'm coming off of Barkley and going into some other training. But just a reminder for everyone that Inside Tracker is a partner with Live Feisty and Iron Women podcast. And if you go to insidetracker.com/feisty, you can get 20% off of your Inside Tracker items that you are doing. So definitely recommend that. Guess what? I have a surprise.
Oh my gosh. Please tell me.
We still have That's It with us for at least a couple more weeks. So April 14th, everyone, is the last day for That's It. At this moment, we'll see. And Haley, have you had any That's It products with you? Did you travel with That's It?
Oh, you know I did. That was totally what I put in my carry-on to have on the plane. And also on both my rides yesterday, you know, just throwing those, especially the mini bars. I find those are like really easy to eat on the bike, like because you can eat them in like two bites. I definitely had some of the mini bars on the ride yesterday, and they are fantastic for travel and for riding, and I'm sure for running too. I haven't done that yet, so but I you can be sure I packed them.
I think it's just my favorite thing is that I just learned this the other day. I thought, you know, their fruit bars must have like a little bit of fruit in them, right? Like just, but they actually have like their apple and mango bar. Haley has a whole apple and a whole mango in one bar. So imagine, I'm just like picturing you throwing in the That's It bar into your carry-on instead of an apple and a mango. Like that's much more efficient, and you're probably the much better seatmate to your plane mates than trying to eat a mango on a plane. I can't even eat a mango in like real life without being really messy and gross. So
you're very messy.
Yeah. But everyone, so you can continue to order That's It. 20% off now off of all your orders. Head to thatsitfruit.com/ironwomen and use code IRONWOMEN for 20% off.
Yes. And thank you to our listeners who have ordered that. I mean, obviously this is a evolving partnership, and it's all thanks to you that we get to keep going.
And Haley, we are just keeping this catch up with us pretty quick today because we have a nice long chat to share with everyone. We're going to let you get back to the camp festivities, and we are talking to Samantha Kingsford today. And Samantha Kingsford is from New Zealand. So, you know, she's one of my, I really love interviewing the Kiwis because I think they have some of the best stories, and Samantha was no different. She's one of the fastest elites in all of Xterra. She won three majors on the world tour in 2019, Xterra Brazil, Victoria, and Mexico. And she captured the Xterra Pan Am Tour title. Then in 2021, she swept the US Xterra series, but missed Maui, which we talk about her reason for missing Maui in the interview. But she came back from that, did get to the States, and finished fourth recently in Clash Miami after participating in the couples triathlon. So she has now had a foray on the road triathlon scene, we'll call it. And we were really excited to talk to her about what she thought about that, if she's going to continue racing on the roads, and what is next for Samantha. So you'll hear from her next. Hi, Samantha. Welcome to the Iron Women podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So I believe you're back in New Zealand after some time in the United States, and things here had been kind of loosening up on the COVID front. And I think down under, you might finally be seeing the same, right? So I recently had a friend travel to New Zealand. I just got email from Air New Zealand inviting me back, right? Which like had me very excited. So tell us, what is life currently like in New Zealand for you?
Yeah, I just got back from the US and back in New Zealand. I guess in New Zealand, we're in a bit of an awkward kind of position at the moment. We're a little bit behind on the whole COVID thing. I think it's only really just starting to hit us at the moment. I think we've just sort of peaked in cases. So yeah, over our summer, it's kind of been, racing hasn't really been happening because I guess all the COVID restrictions and everything that we've had. So it was actually kind of nice to have some races in America and actually have something to aim for, because everything here was getting cancelled on us, which was a little bit depressing.
Did you have to quarantine when you went back, or were you able to go right home?
No, thankfully we didn't. Last year we had to, quarantine in a 2 weeks in a hotel, which was horrific. We didn't even have a window to open.
Wait, so it's we? How many people are in this room?
It was me and my partner Sam. Yeah.
That's the truest test of a relationship. Yeah.
The room was, this was last year, not this year, obviously, thank God. But yeah, the room was a one-bedroom apartment. We had like maybe we had to push the bed right against the wall so that we could have maybe two strides until the seat next to the window. And then, yeah, it was very confined. And we were only allowed 30 minutes out each day to do a little walk, and it was only walking. You weren't allowed power walking. Yeah, it was, excuse my language, but it was hell.
Did you have bikes with you and like trainers? Were you able to ride in the room?
Yeah, we managed to get a wind trainer. We were based in Auckland, so in one of the main cities. So we were able to get a friend of Sam's managed to drop one off to the hotel for us. But that comes with another story, because obviously we had no windows. Air ventilation too was, that kind of like adapted it, and it wasn't really cooling the room down. So you can imagine what the room smelled like when both of us each day had done about 2 hours on the trainer. Yeah, you'd go outside for your little 30-minute walk, and then you'd come in and it was like a brick wall of like, oof. It stinks.
I'm just picturing like moisture on like everything too. Like, oh, what a nightmare.
Yeah. But I mean, we were pretty lucky and thankful that we had, were able to get a trainer in there, because I think if we didn't have that, we would have completely gone nuts. Yeah. So thankfully we didn't have to do that again.
How was the food? Because they have to bring you food, right? Was there enough?
Yeah. Our food was actually really nice, luckily, but you did see pictures of other people in different hotels where their food was horrific. And at the start, it was enough for me, but it wasn't enough for Sam. He was kind of a bit hungry after, but we worked out that you just had to, when they rang you each day to do your little health check and see if you were like mentally okay and everything, that you just had to ask for a little bit more food. So, yeah, eventually we ended up getting enough.
What was the first thing you did when you got out of quarantine? Did you go for a swim?
I actually went for a run. Yeah, I think being confined in a little room and everything, a run was what I really wanted to do. I think, yeah, swimming isn't my most preferred part of triathlon. So, yeah, the run was what I really wanted to get out and do.
Fair enough, fair enough. But well, we do want to talk about your most recent trip to the U.S. But before we do that, we're going to go back to last summer, before you quarantined, before you went back, because you came to the United States, I think, in the spring of 2021, and you competed on the U.S. tour of the Xterra Racing. So this is off-road triathlon. And you did three races, Xterra Oak Mountain in May, Beaver Creek in July, and then the U.S. Championships in Ogden, Utah in September. So that's a long time to, you know, commit to leaving your home country, come to the United States for three big races. What made you make that decision, especially knowing you had this quarantine when you went back?
Yeah, I mean, it was a pretty big risk for us to come over last year to America. And I mean, really, we didn't know if we were going to come over for just one race, or were we going to come over for the three Xterras like we'd sort of planned to. So it was kind of like, yeah, it was a little bit nerve-wracking sitting on that plane leaving New Zealand. Two, we hadn't been exposed to anything to do with COVID. And obviously you read the media and everything of what America was like as well. So that kind of was a little bit nerve-wracking. But I guess because we had no racing. We couldn't go travel anywhere and get any exposure or any, I guess, go and race other people. That's what pushed us to just be like, stuff it, let's just go, what could go wrong kind of thing. We have a good base in Boulder. I guess it's kind of like our second home. So I guess knowing that that was there and we had the support of kind of like, I guess you could say, our second family in America, that sort of pushed us to head there and race. But yeah, I mean, I think the last thing I sort of said to my mum at the airport when she dropped me off was kind of like, this is either going to make us or break us. You know, we're going to go over there and we may only have one race, and financially we're going to come home broke. Or it could be go completely to plan. We could win all three races and have an amazing summer, I guess, of training and racing. And thankfully that fell into place. And yeah, we we won every race that we did in America, which was awesome.
And Sam, the US championship race in Utah, that actually ended up being a run bike run due to algae blooms, I think, in the lake. Yeah. So you mentioned that swimming, you know, isn't like your favorite part of the triathlon, maybe, right? So was that actually helpful to your overall race strategy? Like, was, you know, kind of how did you pivot when you found that out?
Yeah, we got kind of word on about maybe 2 or 3 weeks ahead of the race that, oh, okay. That it was going to be, well, it was looking like it was going to be a duathlon because of the algae. And actually the lake level was like, I think it was like 20% full. So it was like so low. So I don't even think, it would have been a water, run anyway.
Water run, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we kind of were a little bit frustrated because, I mean, we do triathlon and you're kind of like, we do want that swim. Even though swimming's not my preferred and favorite part or discipline to triathlon, I think it's sort of within Xterra, it is one of my stronger disciplines. So I was kind of a little bit disappointed that there was no swim, because that's where I generally get about maybe 1 to 2 minutes ahead on some of the other girls. But I mean, you've got to go with the flow. There's no point in getting all antsy and getting worked up about it, because that's racing. You've got to go with the punches, I guess. And yeah, it actually did work into my favor. I ended up getting a bit of a gap on some of the other girls in the first run, and then continued getting that lead, I guess, on the bike and the run.
Was this the race where there was a young high school girl that competed quite strong in the field? Was this that the championship race?
Yeah, she's a mountain biker. Is that who you're talking about?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. She was in the age group race. And I mean, we started ahead of them. I didn't know anything about this girl or anything like that. And I think she actually had the second fastest time overall of all the women. Luckily she didn't beat me. but yeah, I mean, I would hate to...
That's definitely smart. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, shoot, if she can learn to swim, she could be in maybe 5 years, she could be the up-and-coming elite female, I guess, in Xterra.
It's a different race. It's a different race.
Maybe to help the Kiwis from coming over and sweeping the U.S. circuit, right? We got to get her going.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe I need to improve my mountain biking a bit more.
Sam, what is your background? We tried to do some research, we couldn't find much. And so how did you grow up? I know we've talked to other Kiwis and seems like a very outdoorsy, active culture. So how did you grow up as an athlete, and you know, how did you get into Xterra triathlon racing?
Yeah, I guess most Kiwis, we all grow up during like our school years and high school years of, you kind of just do all sports. I guess I grew up doing, my first ever sport was actually rugby. I had any opportunity to get a day of school, I would sign up to whatever sports team or tournament team was going to get a day of school, and sort of did everything. I guess my main sports in high school that I did was hockey and soccer, and also did a bit of girls rugby as well. I just did every sport that I could. I didn't really pick up triathlon, I guess, until, when was it, maybe kind of halfway through my university years. Obviously, I learned to swim at an early age. I think most Kiwis get put into swim school, and I did a little bit of squad, but I mean, I got sick of looking at the black line. So I gave up that sport pretty early on. I didn't pick up triathlon until halfway through university. I think it was 2021 when ITU Worlds were here in New Zealand. And my twin sister, she actually was racing at the time for High Performance New Zealand. And she was traveling overseas, obviously. And she's like, why don't you should just give the ITU age group race a go. So I guess that's when I started training for triathlon. I did nothing triathlon driven or anything like or related when I was at high school. So I did that for a few years. And then obviously I was at university and I guess my career started needing to come first. So I kind of gave up triathlon and still kept fit, still ran and rode and mountain biked. But yeah, it wasn't until, when was it? Maybe it was 2018 was my first year racing properly as a professional. My first real exposure to, I guess, yeah, Xterra. But obviously my boyfriend, Sam, he was going overseas at the time racing triathlon and racing off-road. And I was kind of, I was getting a bit envious of the places he was traveling while I was stuck in New Zealand working full-time as a PE teacher. So, yeah, I decided, why not give it a go, see where I can end up. So, yeah, I guess I'm pretty new to triathlon. I guess if you exclude the whole COVID year, I think this is my going into my fourth year racing as a professional.
Is your twin sister still racing?
Not triathlon, no. She gave up, I think, when she, maybe about 5 or so years ago. But she's still active. She's kind of getting more into the multi-sport stuff. I think it's probably quite good that we're not competing against each other. We're highly competitive, and it can end in a few arguments sometimes. she's always been supportive and thinks it's amazing and cool what I'm doing now. I think it's a good thing that we're not racing against each other.
And so the U.S. championship race, that wasn't supposed to be your final big race of the year. You did return home to New Zealand, you had to quarantine, right? But you still had plans to be racing the world championships in Maui in December.
Yep.
But it didn't get to unfold exactly like that, right? Because it sounds like the COVID restrictions just didn't allow you to get out of New Zealand again.
We always knew going over that we'd do obviously the three Xterra races on the tour, but we always had in the back of our mind we want to get to Maui. And obviously after the season that we had, it was kind of like we really want to get to Maui. We've been performing well, training has been going really well. But obviously we had to come back to New Zealand. Visas obviously didn't allow us to stay in the States for any longer than 6 months. And originally when we were heading over, we had sort of planned it that our visa would allow us to stay until Worlds. But because of COVID and everything, they had to change the Worlds dates, which then fell out of the 6 months. But because New Zealand was, I guess, shut off, the only way in was if you had an MIQ spot, to isolate in one of the chosen hotels. And they were becoming pretty hard to get. So we had to take our spot that we had, I guess you could say, won. And that didn't allow us to then come back to America and race because we couldn't get another spot to then come home. And also it was $4,000 New Zealand to isolate. That's a huge expense to then go over to Maui again and then pay another $4,000 to
have the worst vacation ever.
Essentially, like, you're kind of like, exactly. And it rained. And you're going to Maui.
I mean, the Maui part is nice, but like the 2 weeks after when you're just in a hotel paying that much money to just sweat in the same.
It's not a hotel that you want to be staying in for 4 weeks. There's no pool or anything to lie by. But it was pretty frustrating and heartbreaking not to be able to go over and race. Sitting back in New Zealand watching the race unfold, it did turn into a triathlon. So it wasn't, I guess, wasn't a true world champs for Xterra. It was pretty heartbreaking to sit here in New Zealand knowing that you have nothing in your power to be able to get over there to race. But I guess that makes you even more hungry for this year to go over and race and, hopefully get on the podium, I guess, at World Champs.
Yeah, and so obviously Xterra, off-road, mountain biking, trail running, that's your primary focus in triathlon, but you just raced in two road triathlons, yeah. The couples non-drafting road triathlons, couples championship, yeah. And then Clash Miami. So when did you decide to, you know, make that transition to throw in some road races?
I guess it's a funny story, really. We've always sort of been like, oh, nah, that road, that's boring. We don't want to do it. But I guess never say never. It wasn't really until last year, I guess, we went to America and had the three off-road races. But we were kind of like, if we had taken over a TT bike or something, we would have had more opportunity to race. And I guess we train when we're over there in Boulder with Julie Dibbins and her crew in their swim squad. And everyone was kind of like, oh, why don't you just like, you know, try the off-road stuff? You guys obviously are strong on a bike. You can push power. But our main concern was obviously sitting in that TT position and in one position for a long period of time. With mountain biking, you sort of get up and out of this seat and moving around a lot. And I guess, yeah, Julie was kind of like, no, I honestly think that you guys should, like, it would open up a few more doors, and you should just at least try it. So, yeah, the plan, we came home and sold our road bikes and brought TT bikes. But, yeah, I never actually started properly learning to ride the TT bike until, I guess, early January this year. And my first ride on the bike was didn't really go too well. My TT bars hadn't been put on like straight, and I got on into the bars and started veering to one side. And yeah, I was just like, shoot, this is actually really hard. Holding that position and everything. Yeah, it wasn't like the mountain bike where you're like, this is fun, go hit some trails. But yeah, I mean, I got used to it. And yeah, I think it's just time on that bike that is really important. And I mean, we still, both of me and my partner Sam, still haven't spent enough time, I don't think, on that bike to fully be comfortable on it. But yeah, we got an open invitation to go to the couples race. And I guess it's an invitation that doesn't come around often. So we would have been mad to say no to that race. And then we were kind of like, oh, well, Clash Miami's a week later. We might as well make the trip worth it and have a couple of races over in America before we then return home to New Zealand. So I guess the couples race was actually my first ever race on the TT bike. And then, yeah, Clash, I guess you could say, was my first ever longer non-drafting race. So I was pretty nervous going into Clash. I didn't really know what to expect.
The time trial bike gets easier when you screw the bars on tightly.
Yeah, yeah. Once I worked out that I need to make them straight, yeah. Then I was away.
Did you guys have trouble sourcing bikes? Because, like, I mean, I know a lot of people are having issues, and to get, you know, you'd have to find two, right? One for each of you. Was that an issue for you?
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a bike sponsor, so it was kind of, we just had to find a bike that was our size and what was available in New Zealand. And obviously New Zealand's at the bottom of the world. We don't get as much stock, and it's harder to get things to New Zealand. But I was fortunate enough, my twin sister, she actually now works in specialised for New Zealand. So pre us coming home last year, we sent her a message and said, can you source us a bike, knowing that we had a huge shortage in New Zealand? So yeah, thankfully she was able to find us one. I think they came from Australia. But yeah, I think if we'd left it any later, we probably wouldn't have been able to find a bike in New Zealand. So yeah, that would have been, see you later to the whole non-drafting racing, I think. Yeah.
And we did talk to Rachel Olson before the couples triathlon, who gave us some background on it going into the event. You know, I watched a little bit of the coverage, and it seems like, you know, it was a fun event. There was like a charity component, which is never a bad thing, right? And it was like a fun day of racing hard. What was the vibe down there? What was your reaction to the whole thing?
Yeah, it was like, I mean, it's a different format. You don't this, I mean, that was the first kind of race that you actually get to race with your partner. I guess ITU has the team aspect to triathlon, but that's about it. So that kind of aspect of the racing as a team and I guess racing with your significant other, that was all new and quite cool, I think. Originally, it was meant to be, so I would go do like the real short sprint triathlon, then I'd tag my partner, he would go do it, then he would tag me again. So you're essentially doing two mini triathlons each. But because I think it was because of something to do with the local council or whatever, the road closure, the organizer wasn't able to allow that format to go ahead. So it turned into just, I guess, one mini sprint try each. But yeah, it was real competitive, I guess. Like a lot of us, I mean, there was a mixed variety of triathlon. I guess there was the ITU, there was the Ironman distances, there was the 70.3, and then I guess me and Sam, the only off-road Xterra athletes. So I think he had quite a good variety of like triathletes and triathlete couples. And yeah, I mean, I think there was a few surprises on like who got the top three and who like where each couple sort of came. And it was quite cool. Like pre the race, it was like you guys get to decide who goes first. So some couples sent their females first, some sent their males. So you got to sort of decide where you wanted to put your strength first or second or whatever. And that actually had a huge impact on the results in the end of who you put first. I think a couple of the couples who put their females first actually said at the end, we were like, yeah, I think we made a big mistake. We should have sent our male first. So yeah, I think it's cool that we're getting these different formats of triathlon. It's changing it up, making things a bit more interesting. Yeah, but it was a cool event. I hope that there's more in the future of this kind of format. Yeah, I just think it's quite cool.
And I did watch the race, but you'll have to forgive me. I've sort of forgotten. So it sounds like the other Sam, your partner, yeah, he went first, yeah, and then you went second. How did that play out for you? Like chasing, you know, what was, and I, where did you finish? I should know this, but I don't.
We actually ended up seventh, which we were actually quite surprised. But yeah, Sam, he went first. I think he came out in the main bunch in the swim. Again, that was kind of one of his, I think it was his third sort of race on the TT bike. And he came off sort of, yeah, in the main group in the bike. And then, I mean, he'll say this too. I think he overdid it maybe in the run. And I think he tagged me off in fourth, I think. And I was thinking, oh, crap, like now I've got to hold this. And yeah, I mean, I think Paula was coming pretty quick on my heels in the swim. I managed to just sort of sit on her a little bit towards the end. I mean, I lost a few positions in the run. But yeah, I think overall I think we surprised ourselves, and hopefully I think we surprised a few other couples too. I don't think anyone sort of expected us to be sort of that in that position. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty nerve-wracking being tagged off fourth and then being like, oh crap, now I'm the one that's like, everything's on me. If I really balls this up, it's all me. But I mean, that's racing, and yeah, that's kind of the cool aspect to it.
So, and from that couples championship, you did move on to Clash Miami, and I watched the coverage of that day as well, and it was, I mean, it was a fairly short race. You know, it's like shorter than a 70.3. I don't know the exact distances, yeah, but it looked like a Kona style Ironman. I mean,
there's a lot going on.
Yes, that women's yeah, race was wild. I mean, can you tell us about those race conditions and how you managed that heat? Because you did, you finished fourth, but there was a lot. I mean, yeah, there was even like, did you know how many loops you had to do? I mean, there was a lot going on.
Yeah, there was a lot going on that day. I mean, yeah, it was hot. I mean, Florida, it's always known to be hot. And yeah, I mean, it was a little bit shorter, I guess, than what you would say a normal 70.3 was, which I think actually was good for me, being my first proper non-drafting race. But yeah, I mean, the swim, it was just two laps. So I don't think there was anything overly special about that. I managed to sit on the back of the main group, which I was pretty stoked about. Yeah, so I came out of that first bunch and then jumped on the bike and was sort of holding on to those girls. But yeah, I mean, throughout the day, I mean, we started at, I think it was 10 o'clock. So I knew it was going to be hot, especially by the time we got to that run. And yeah, I mean, I think it was like about 4 or 5 laps to go. And all of a sudden, I think Emma Pallant and Chelsea and that sort of started pulling away from me a bit more. And I kind of looked at my power and I was, or yeah, my speed. And I was like, am I like slowing down a lot? Because they've pulled a lot into me. And then coming onto the run, yeah, I think, I mean, and watching the replays, I think, yeah, the girls, potentially they maybe had put a little bit too much into that last bit of the bike and started overheating and couldn't quite cool themselves down. Because yeah, when we came onto the run, I mean, you got to think the heat's coming down on top of you, but also the heat coming off the road. And I think that they were sort of saying it was, yeah, like Kona conditions. It was pretty hot. We only had one aid station too out on the run for most of that run. But yeah, I knew I just had to, every aid station, I just had to make sure I was getting ice on me, cooling myself down, putting it down my suit. And yeah, I think it was the second lap. It was when Emma went down with the heat. And I mean, you're out there racing and you don't really know what's going on. And when I sort of was running up to Emma and sort of passed her, she was kind of grabbing her leg and I thought maybe she's just cramping or she'd pulled her calf or something like that. And yeah, I kind of ran past her and was like, come on, Emma, just like get up, keep going, like walk it off. And like, I mean, I feel really bad now. And I messaged her, I was like, I feel terrible. I told you just keep going. Meanwhile, you're on the road, like heat exhaustion. But yeah, I think like, yeah, and then Chelsea, she pulled out because of the heat as well. But I think it's just really, really important to not overdo it and make sure every lap you're cooling yourself down. I mean, I've done one race in Asia with off-road and we have way less aid stations out there than what we had on Clash Miami. And I don't know, maybe from racing that race, you know that you need to take on as much as you can just to keep your body temperature down, because as soon as you get overheated, it's game over, lights are out. But yeah, I mean, I surprised myself, I think, in that race. Going into that race, I was not expecting to be in that position. I would have been stoked, I think, going in if I was top 10. Just because it was such an unknown territory for me. And I mean, I've never raced those girls before. I don't know how a non-drafting race plays out. Yeah, so I was pretty happy coming away with fourth. But I think on, like, through the race, you had a big, like, with the how many laps you have to do, keeping track of that, you had a big board that told you how many laps you had to do on the bike. And also you have your little bike computer. But if you watch the replay on the run, I jumped from like, I think it's like fourth or third or fourth I was in, and then I jumped to eighth. And they actually thought I had done an extra lap on the bike, and I was short of a lap on the run. And thankfully I had my watch. I was running with my watch, and I was able to keep track of 16 Ks, or it was just over 16 Ks. I don't know what that is in miles. So I was keeping track of that. But as I was coming into the home, finish shoot, one of the spectators was like, are you sure you're finished?
Oh, no.
For me, I was just like, yeah, like pointed to my watch and was like, yep, 16 Ks. And he's like, okay, sweet, if you think you're finished.
And he's like, what's a K?
And he was kind of, okay, if you think you're finished, and I, like, you know, ran down thinking, like, well, knowing I was done. And it wasn't until, like, I'd finished and sat down, and Alicia, who's on the commentary, came up to me, and she's like, we actually can't interview you. And I kind of, like, looked at her and was like, hey, it's like, the timing thing says you've done an extra lap on the bike and you're one short on the run. And I was kind of like, you're kidding me. Like, I'm not getting up and running anymore. And I was like, no, like, my watch. And, like, showed her, and she's like, no, I believe you. Like, I've been on the course the whole time, but it's, something's happened with the timing. And yeah, she's like, we need to, like, prove that you have officially finished and you've done the right amount before we can, like, do anything and say that you've officially finished fourth. So yeah, I mean, I was kind of like, my heart started racing, because I was like, shoot, like, don't tell me I have to go run another lap. Like, I've just sat down and I've, like, seized up. I'm not going to run another lap.
That is the worst nightmare. Yeah. I'm like, even on a cool day, but on that day, and then they're like, surprise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Surprise.
And for my first, too, like, my first link race as well, being like, no.
I don't know what I would have done. I mean, because you're like, probably start second guessing, like, is your watch right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But, like, I mean, it is hard because it's a whole heap of short little laps, and, but I think, yeah, note to myself, if I'm ever going to do a short race like that again, 100%, like, and I think to anyone, I guess, wear a watch, because, I mean, anything can go wrong with the timing and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, if I hadn't had that, maybe I would have lost my position and I would have had to get up and do another lap on the run. Yeah.
Sam, when you've been thinking about the race now, like, looking back, and just, I guess you didn't have a 2-week quarantine to, like, really ponder it too much, but, you know, have you thought about, like, how has Xterra Racing prepared you for, like, just, you know, timing snafus aside, right? Like, I haven't done an Xterra race before, but I mountain bike a little bit and I trail run, right? And it's like, you're constantly thinking, you're constantly paying attention to the changing conditions, to how your body's feeling, to, like, being able to manage, you know, whereas a lot of times in the non-draft racing, you're like head down, you could, like, be thinking, you know, tune out totally, right? Do you think that Xterra has helped prepare you for unpredictable course conditions and to kind of stay in the moment a little better? I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Xterra, there's so much that can be thrown into you on a race day and a course. And I guess it teaches you to, I guess, roll with the punches. You've just got to go with the flow. And I don't think, like, I don't think the whole training aspect is hugely different between the two. I mean, obviously one's off-road, one's on-road, but we haven't really changed a hell of a lot of what we do in training. It's still pretty similar. I mean, leading up to the couples race and Clash Miami, we were spending obviously more time on the road bike and doing our sessions in the TT position. But yeah, I guess with Xterra, you can't switch off. As soon as you switch off, especially on, I mean, in the mountain bike, a tree root or whatever could pop out in front of you and takes your front wheel off, and that's you on the ground. Same with the run, you don't know what's coming around the corner, whether there's a whole heap of rocks or roots or something. You just can't switch off, and you got to be on your game the whole time. And I guess, yeah, whether that transferred over to, I guess, Clash Miami, where I was constantly paying attention to the board, watching my, where I was at on my gun, like my bike computer and my run watch. Yeah, maybe that helped me pay attention to make sure that I actually did do the right amount. But yeah, I mean, I keep saying, like, I don't think training wise is a huge difference between the two. I mean, Xterra, you look at the distances and it's more towards the Olympic distance when you look at it on paper. But when you actually look at the race times, it's sort of more leaning towards the 70.3 times. Depending on the course, some are kind of bang on to what a 70.3 would be, but it's well over that two and a half to 3 hours that you're out racing for, which is pretty similar, I guess, to the non-drafting. Yeah, I guess, yes, the huge difference is one's on road, one's off road, and the bike's very different.
And Sam, so you had this experience in Miami. You have Julie Dibbins, who during her career, you know, before she was a coach, she did race off-road and on-road simultaneously very, very well. Does this, you know, you kind of said you there were some opportunities maybe you missed last summer. Do you think you're going to try to really do both, you know, this year? Are you hooked?
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm converted. I still like the off-road stuff. I think it's way more fun. I guess, yeah, it's the mountain biking. I don't think I could give that up. But I think you'd be dumb not to continue and do the, like, continue with the 70.3 stuff and do some more of that kind of racing. But yeah, I think, so the, like, our season this year is we will do focus from the main part of the Xterra. We're going to head to Europe and do the Xterra season sort of there. There is possibly some 70.3s in between that in the mid-year, whether or not it's going to work in our program or not. If it does, and if our coaches sort of give us the go ahead that, yeah, I think it will work, we might potentially head, come back to the States and do, what is it, Clash?
Watkins Glen? Watkins Glen.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I was going to say in New York. So potentially do that race if it fits. And then definitely after Xterra Worlds has been in the beginning of October, I think we're planning to sort of do more 70.3s. But yeah, I mean, I think we would be, you'd be dumb not to sort of dabble in both of them. There's definitely a lot more exposure, I think, within the 70.3s, which is awesome for us because, unfortunately, Xterra hasn't sort of jumped on that bandwagon just yet. And there's still not those, I guess, sponsorship and exposure opportunities like what the 70.3 Ironman distances get. But I think it's just awesome too to be able to, I guess, transfer between the both and mix it up. If there's sort of no off-road racing happening for a while, it means we can go and hit up some of the non-drafting races, and it just fills up our year a bit more and makes traveling, I guess, to the Northern Hemisphere kind of more worth it because we are uplifting our life, I guess, for between 6 to 8 months from New Zealand, which is a huge time to be away from home, and financially that's a lot of money too. So I think, yeah, to be able to, I guess, have a go at both of them, it might open a few more doors for us.
And you mentioned that the training actually is pretty similar, but what about just kind of the cultures in general? Like, you know, did you have any impressions between like the road, I could say, I don't know how to say, like 70.3, I guess, road racing,
yeah,
triathlon culture and the Xterra culture?
Yeah, I guess, yeah, that's quite a good question. I guess coming from the Xterra background, I guess, how do I put this? Things are a little bit more, I guess, casual, a little bit more of a chill vibe, I guess you could say. And then coming to the I guess, on-road, non-drafting scene, my first experience, I didn't actually do this race. It was Tauranga Half here in New Zealand, and me and Sam rock on up to the day before for him to rack his bike, and we were just like, whoa, everyone's like highly strung here, very different vibe to what we're used to. I think, yeah, just everyone seems to be, I guess, maybe this is what I need to do, and this is like they're in their little zone doing what they want to do, where I guess, yeah, Xterra is a little bit more chilled. But I mean, we still had a good time. Clash Miami wasn't as highly strung as what it was here when we turned up to the race in Tauranga. But yeah, you definitely turn up to the races and you're like, whoa, everybody's got all the gear. I don't even have my own set of race wheels. I've borrowed a pair because I don't have a pair. I don't have the best TT like bike position. I don't have the best like bars. They're probably not as aero as what they should be. And I guess that for a first timer, that's probably what was most intimidating is like all the gear that all the athletes have. And I mean, it's not even the pros that have it, it's all the age groupers that have all the gear. And here I am, don't even have a proper aero helmet, don't even have my own race wheels. So yeah, it was a little bit intimidating, I think. But I mean, now I know what I'm in for. Maybe it won't be so intimidating for the future.
I think you have a bright future. I think it does. It gets easier as you go, but it's fun that you can do both. So you kind of alluded to your season. Are you going to be able to race in New Zealand at all? Or is it just you'll head to Europe and that will start your new race season?
Yeah. We should have had, I think, Xterra in New Zealand would have been happening in 2 weeks. But unfortunately, because of COVID and everything, that race was cancelled. So we don't actually have any more racing here in New Zealand. So I guess, yeah, the next plan is to head to Europe. I think our first race is going to be Xterra Portugal. That's more towards the end of May. And then, yeah, then we'll do the whole season there, I think, until October, and then hopefully head to the States. And then by the time we get back to New Zealand, more racing, I guess, we're going into summer there then. And so more racing will start happening in our season, I guess. But I guess, I mean, that throws another curveball into, I guess, racing overseas and then coming back to New Zealand and wanting to race your summer. It makes it a really, really long season. And you've got to be really conscious, I think, to sort of have downtime. As much as we would love to be racing full on in New Zealand summer, I think our main racing is overseas. That's where we perform. That's where you can get more exposure, etc. So that's kind of our main season. But it does make it really hard because people are kind of like, oh, why are you not performing in New Zealand? Like, you should be. It's your summer. It's our race season. But, yeah, I guess if you're going 24/7 all year round, you're just going to end up in a massive hole. So, yeah, I mean, as much as we would like to race more in New Zealand, there's just not the races here. And, yeah, it's not healthy for us to be racing all year round.
Well, Sam, thanks so much for taking the time to chat with us today. We really enjoyed getting to know some more about you. You know, enjoy the time in New Zealand that you have to relish it being home a little bit before you're back on the road. And we look forward to following your Xterra season in Europe. And then when you're back over here for more 70.3.
Awesome. Thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much to Sam for coming on and chatting with us. I hope our listeners are enjoying having some of these Xterra pros and Xterra champions that we've been having on over, you know, the last few months on. So let us know if you'd like to hear about from the off-road triathletes as much as the on-road triathletes. We'd love to see what you all think. And Haley, what are you up to today? I'm about to head out on a bike ride. Looks sunny here, but it's actually pretty cold still. So you can see that I'm in the process of getting on my winter gear and I'm not super pumped about riding. So tell me what you're doing and get me pumped. And then in my head, I'll be in sunny Carlsbad doing my workout today.
So I have a pretty big swim day today. I think I'm headed to Hillary's Masters group. And then after that, we're going straight to the beach to do some open water swimming and like practicing like beach starts and just like swimming in surf. And so I'm actually really excited about that because it's obviously something I can't do in Bozeman. So that's my plan. And I think tomorrow morning I'm doing a trail run. So definitely making the most of it here and getting in lots of social time and just like you said, filling up my happiness cup. So Alyssa, enjoy your ride, stay warm, and thanks for bearing with my technological difficulties today.
Oh my gosh. Thanks so much for finding a way to make it happen. That's the Iron Man mentality coming through in the podcasting for sure. It was great to see your ear and your left eye today. And I can't wait to see your whole smiling face next week. Safe travels back home. And I'll talk to you later, Haley.
Bye, Alyssa.
You have been listening to the Iron Women podcast hosted by Haley Chura and Alyssa Gadeski.
Iron Women is a production of Feisty Media and is edited and produced by Lindsay Glassford. Head to livefeisty.com to find more podcasts, events, stories, and fresh perspectives.
Thanks for listening.
Alyssa, AminoCo has been a longtime podcast sponsor, and every time I'm listening to the show and I hear our AminoCo ad, I'm always shocked to hear how AminoCo co-founder Dr. Robert Wolf has run a marathon in under 2 hours and 30 minutes 62 times. I just can't believe that's a real stat.
Me either. It is very impressive, and it gives me a lot of confidence Dr. Wolf knows what he's talking about when it comes to performance and recovery. I actually took AminoCo Heal before and after my recent knee surgery.
I've been using Heal a lot after really big workouts as I've started to ramp up my training. And I also use my personal favorite, AminoCo Perform, before and during my hardest sessions.
Do you have a favorite flavor?
For Perform, I definitely go with the strawberry lemonade. It has a really light flavor and a little bit of caffeine that I think helps keep me focused during my really tough intervals. And for Heal, I like vanilla. I just feel like vanilla gets me into recovery mode. What about you?
The vanilla Heal is my favorite too. I find it mixes really well into my post-workout shakes that I make.
Wait, what do you put in your shakes?
Well, oftentimes just whatever I have in the fridge, sometimes vegetables, sometimes collagen, you know, whatever I have. Summer shakes are way more interesting because it's like I make them cold. But the winter shakes are a little less fancy.
Do you ever add snow to your winter shakes?
I mean, I'm going to start doing that now.
I don't know. Make sure it's clean snow. I am not quite as fancy. I just add water. I think it still works pretty well. But however you like your AminoCo, you can rest assured that in clinical trials, muscle protein synthesis from exercise more than doubled by athletes using Perform, and Heal was shown to trigger muscle growth and repair better than other high-quality protein sources.
Head to aminoco.com/ironwomen to see very large photos of me and Haley using AminoCo products. Then select your favorite products and use code IRONWOMEN for 30% off at checkout. First time purchases also come with a free gift.
That's aminoco.com/ironwomen and code IRONWOMEN for 30% off.
All right, Alyssa, I'm like starting to swim more again, and I feel like you were swimming a lot last year with one water. And how did you keep your hair from getting so destroyed?
I was swimming so much last year, and I used TryHard, Kelly, and I still swear by it. They have extensively researched this problem and created a superior vegan, dermatologically tested proprietary blend. TryHard has shampoo, conditioner, body wash, and more stuff. Everything you're going to need for your pre and post swim necessities. I've also seen that top pros like Chelsea Sodaro and Lucy Charles Barkley also praise the effectiveness of TryHard. I think it's like definitely changed how good I feel just coming out of chlorine.
And we have a code right now too for anyone who wants to try, you know, try hard and stop suffering from dry, itchy skin, having their hair get all, you know, green, which happens to me because mine's like super blonde and get all beat up. You can try any of the TryHard products with the code 20feisty, that's 20feisty, for 20% off store-wide at tryhard.co. So that's 20feisty for 20% off at tryhard.co.
Chasing Epic is the essence of the Orca brand. It is about seeking the moments in life that make us feel truly alive and connected with the beauty of the world around us.
And let's be real, Chasing Epic is feisty.
Orca has been a longtime partner of Feisty, and we work with them year after year because we love their products and their commitment to creating amazing wetsuits made for women. They also supported me on Team USA last year at the One Water Race, which was most definitely also Chasing Epic.
With Orca's range of triathlon wetsuits, including Apex and Athlex, you can choose between flexibility, buoyancy, or a combination of both. There's a wetsuit for every triathlete and for all of your epic adventures.
And as a Feisty listener, you can get 15% off with the code IRONWOMEN15 at orca.com.